Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see and hear you all today. It's that 3 minute break. I looked and it was just like an exodus. I said, "Well, everybody's leaving," but glad you came back in. It's good to be here this morning. It's just great to hear the conversation, and there's just a lot of energy in the room. That's good. I enjoy that in the morning. It's good to see y'all. Just a quick word. As many of you know, Rob Gerber is one of our pastors here, and maybe you haven't seen him for a couple weeks. He hasn't left the country. Last week he was at high school LT, and this week he's teaching, helping out down at B-Side downtown. He's teaching there this morning and next week. So if you wonder where he's been, that's just a little word. Anyway, so as you know, if you've been coming around this summer, we're going through a series called A Time for Everything. And it's taken from a passage in the Old Testament in the book of Ecclesiastes that lists a bunch of things, a bunch of occurrences. And it's a fairly well-known passage because of it's fairly often quoted because it's descriptive of what we experience in this life, and it's just a list of pairs of experiences or happenings, and as we've mentioned as we've gone along, these things are written, or the book of Ecclesiastes, I guess, is written to us where we live right now, And it's not written to folks living in a perfect place. Am I kind of scratchy here? Okay. And it's written to us where we live now, and it's written to us in a broken world. And just in light of it's no secret that we live in a broken world. I don't think I need to convince anyone that this world is a kind of a messed up place. Just the news this week is just full of tragedy, full of brokenness, full of violence and anger and all kinds of things. And our world is not as it was intended to be. And this list is written to us living in this world. And it gives us some perspective, I guess, and that's what we're looking at this week, or each week, is looking at each of these pairs. What does it say about this life? And then what do we do with that information or that those concepts? And so we've been working our way through this, and it started out, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build. And last week, Jason talked about a time to weep and a time to laugh. And today, we're going to talk about a time to mourn and a time to dance. And that's closely related to last week's, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. So we're going to talk about mourning and dancing. And oftentimes, these messages have been, there's something that's kind of negative or sad, and then there's something very positive or happy, and this one is no exception to that. And last week, Jason talked about a time to weep and a time to laugh, and emotions, and how oftentimes we maybe are reluctant to explore our emotions or experience strong emotions. We may tend to be kind of stoic, and maybe we live with blunted emotions, I think was a term that Jason used. And I think there's a bit of a difference between the weeping and laughing, and the mourning and dancing. When I think of mourning and dancing, I think more of it's related to an occasion. It's related to a specific situation. So just starting with a time to mourn. What we think about mourning, what is mourning? Mourning is this typically associated when there's a death. Most commonly, we think of that. I guess it can be anytime there's a loss, anytime there's a significant loss, whether it be a death or separation from loved ones for any number of reasons. It can be a loss of a job. It can be loss of good health. It can be all kinds of things that we may find ourselves mourning over. And mourning is really oftentimes used kind of interchangeably with grief. But if you think about it, grief is really what you're feeling, what you're experiencing internally, right? I mean, grief is those feelings of loss or sadness. And mourning is how we express those things outwardly. You know, in some cultures, there's very specific behaviors or practices or observances for mourning. In the Victorian era, in the 1800s, there were very specific rules about mourning. How long you wore black, even the kind of materials your clothes were made of. They wore kind of scratchy material, uncomfortable material during their time of mourning. In fact, the rules for mourning in the Victorian era was for mourning a spouse, you mourn for 2 years. You wore black for 2 years. That'd certainly make picking out clothes in the morning easy. For 2 years, you wouldn't have to think about what to wear. I think I'll wear black again today. But then for different relationships, it was a shorter period of time. You know, but there were prescribed rules for mourning. One of the reasons, this is kind of an aside, but one of the reasons we mourn, one of the reasons we feel lost, and I just want to make this point, is that because we are able to love, and we are able to be attached, and we're able to feel those strong emotions, and we're made in God's image to have those relationships. We're not animals, and so we mourn when we lose someone. And we're sad. I have yet to see a crowd of animals around roadkill mourning. It just doesn't happen. But we mourn when we lose someone, and we express that. And so, what does mourning look like? Many of you know, I worked for many years as a county medical examiner, so I investigate death. So I experienced, or observed, I should say, I didn't experience, I observed acute mourning. When someone was first confronted with the fact of a loved one's passing. And it's varied. People respond a lot of different ways, but it's dramatic. And there's things that come out of there's sounds that come out of a person that are, I don't know how to say it, but it's unusual. It's dramatic, but it's very different. Different individuals. Some people mourn loudly. Some people mourn quietly. Some wailing. In some cultures, wailing is common and it's expected, and it's loud crying, very loud. And so there's all kinds of cultural and personality differences and all that, but. In our culture, just as a culture, I think we tend to minimize mourning. We'd like it to be, we kind of like to put it in a box and okay, there's the visitation, there's the funeral, couple days off of work and then let's get back to normal, okay? I think as a culture, we tend to do that. We tend to hurry it along. We want it to be abbreviated. In fact, oftentimes people, I think, say things to the one that's mourning to hopefully kind of hurry the process up. You know, because oftentimes I think we're not comfortable with people's emotions, but with others' strong emotions like that. And so we say things like, well, he had a good long life. Well, yeah, but it wasn't long enough. You know, I mean, the mourning person can, or I love this one, he died doing what he loved. Well, yeah, but died nonetheless. Or he wouldn't want you to feel bad. You know, I don't believe that one. Because, I mean, just being honest, someday when I pass from this earthly life, and I hope that my loved ones feel bad. I mean, is that selfish? I don't know. I hope I've had a good influence on people and think, oh, I hope they feel bad. And if somebody says, he wouldn't want you to feel bad, they're not telling the truth. at my funeral. I mean, but we say these things to try to, I think, to minimize it, hurry the process along because we want it to be done with. So according to this simple little verse here, there is a time to mourn. There is a time to mourn. And it's good and it's right to feel and express those strong emotions of loss and sadness. It's not only okay, but it's healthy to mourn. It's healthy to mourn and to mourn well. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. So there's an account in the book of John I wanted to look at. And I love this account for a number of reasons. But Jesus was in the midst and actually towards the end of his ministry. And he had there was a family that he was close to. Some of you are familiar with two sisters, Martha and Mary. They were friends and supporters of Jesus. They would have he and his disciples over at their house, and they had a brother, Lazarus. And Jesus had just been in their neighborhood in Judea, and the religious leaders had taken issue with some of the things Jesus was saying, and they wanted to kill him. They tried to stone him. He got away, went a couple days' journey away, and was with his disciples in another place. And then he got a message that from these sisters that their brother Lazarus was sick. And it's kind of interesting. He told his disciples, you know, when he got this news, that this happened so that they would see God's glory and this such. And then he stayed for two more days where he was. So he didn't go running off to Lazarus. He waited. And so then, a couple days later, he and his disciples went back to this place. Actually, his disciples thought they were going following him to his death because that's where the people wanted to kill him. And he says, well, let's go die with him. So they went back to where Martha and her sister were. And when they got there, Lazarus had died. He'd already died, and he'd been dead 4 days. And Jesus met Martha just outside their village. And he spoke with Martha briefly. He shared with her some hope for the future. She said some very significant things about who she believed he was. He was the Messiah. And then she sent for her sister Mary, and she came out and met Jesus there. And so we pick up the story there. And both sisters, when Jesus came, they said, Jesus, if you'd only been here, Lazarus wouldn't have died. They knew he was capable of some amazing things, and they were convinced that their brother would not have died if he'd been there. But anyway, Mary came to where Jesus was, and it says in verse 33 in John 11, it says, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. It said when he saw their weeping, when he saw their grief, when he saw their mourning, he was deeply moved. Deeply moved. And I think this is a phenomenon that I think we're familiar with. Observed grief is very moving. When we observe someone else, someone who's close to us grieving, that's very moving. If I see my wife grieving or my children, that's very moving to me. It's more moving sometimes than my own sadness. And that's what Jesus, he was moved by these sisters that were grieving their brother. It says, he said, where have you laid him? Come and see, Lord, they replied. And Jesus wept. Jesus cried with these sisters. But right from the time Jesus got the news that Lazarus was dead, he knew what he was going to do. That Lazarus was not going to stay dead. That in fact, he knew here when he wept with these sisters, he knew that in a few minutes, Lazarus was going to be walking out of the tomb. So to my thinking, I see the sisters crying, and what do I want? I want that to stop. I want that crying to stop. I say, don't cry. Don't cry. It'll be okay. Just give me a couple minutes. And oftentimes, that's our response to mourning or to grief. We want to fix it. Jesus didn't. Even though he was going to fix it, he didn't sidestep their grief. He entered into it. He entered into their mourning, entered into their grief. That says a lot to me. He was present, and he was touched by their grief. God, Jesus enters into our grief. He's not unmoved. He's not someone to say, come on, suck it up. It'll be okay. Quit your crying. You know, he entered into their grief. He appreciated it. He accepted it. And in the same way, he does that for us now through the Spirit. This is the same Jesus that we follow today. This is the same Jesus that indwells us today. He hasn't changed. He still is touched by people's grief. He doesn't always have a 5-minute plan like he did with Lazarus. It's going to relieve the issue. But he comes alongside. He's present. Not necessarily to rescue, not necessarily to remove the hurt, but to be with us. To be with us. And many of you have experienced that in times of grief, in times of sorrow. You know that I think with our children, if you've got kids, or with others, with friends that are going through hard times, being present is really a key thing. We had when our son Joel was I think he was probably about 8 years old. He was riding his bicycle kind of crazy, and he went over the handlebars, landed on his face, and broke his 2 front teeth off. Not entirely, he left some behind, but broke his teeth off. And I was with him. I think my dad was with us, and we rode back home, and I delivered him home, and I was kind of, believe it or not, I tend to be kind of matter-of-fact. I brought him home, but Joel felt bad, and Nancy sat with him, and he cried, and it's kind of amazing. Years later, now, so 20-some years later, he was recounting to us, actually in writing, some things he remembered about his mom and dad and appreciated about us. And he recalled that occasion out of his childhood when Nancy sat with him, and she couldn't say, it's okay, I'll fix your teeth. She couldn't fix his teeth. We did get him, the dentist did, but he sat there and was comforted by his mom while he cried over his 2 broken front teeth. And so just being present and coming alongside is a comfort. And, you know, Jesus knew the end of Lazarus' story. He knew the end of the story. He knew that Lazarus was going to walk out in a few minutes. And he knows the end of our story as well. In Revelation 21:4, it says that when there's at the end of this world, at the end of this age, there'll be a new heaven and new earth, it says. And it says it'll wipe away every tear. There'll be no more mourning. There'll be no more death. All of that'll be past. It'll be a new world. And all that'll be not even a memory. And he knows the end of our story. But he comes alongside and comforts us in the midst of this life when we run into trouble and we run into sadness. So that's the mourning. So there is a time to mourn. There's a time to be sad. There's a time to express those feelings. It's okay, and it's healthy, and it's good. Time to dance. Time to dance. We all know what dancing is. Some people... See? Well, yeah. There's... No, like someone said in the production meeting, if I dance, you'll mourn. No. No, actually, I blame it on my heritage. I'm Scandinavian in heritage and Swedish to be specific. And, you know, you've seen Irish dance. You know, they don't move their arms, the legs do a lot of things. It's neat. We've been to some of the Irish dance here, and some of the young folks here do that. Well, I learned, as a kid, I learned Swedish dance. It's a lot like Irish dance, but you don't move your legs. So anyway, that's where I come from. But dancing is an expression of joy. Dancing is It's a bodily expression of being excited. You know, I thought, well, where do we see, you know, we see dancing at occasions. You know, there's wedding dances, probably the most common. People dance. It's a joyful occasion. Two people are coming together. They're committing themselves. They're getting married. It's fun. And we have a dance. People jump around, and some are better at it than others. And it's a celebration. I think of other times people dance when there's a victory. I think of end zone dances. There's some pretty exuberant dancing. The Lambeau Leap is a type of dance. It's kind of short, but it's a dance. And so dancing is that expression of celebration. And in the Old Testament, there was dancing. And sometimes it was I suspect they had wedding dances, you know, that, you know, all circled around and kicking their feet, you know. But there were also spontaneous dances. You know, after in the history of Israel, they got led out of Egypt, and they had people chasing them, this big group of people. And they go through the Red Sea. Red Sea closes. They're protected from their enemies. And Miriam, she was a woman there. She led a dance and a song in celebration. So there was David danced when they brought the ark back to Jerusalem with the presence of God. He was excited about bringing God's presence back into where it belonged. He was just so excited. He was leaping and dancing. And so dancing is a celebration of good things, of victory. And we don't see a lot of dancing, you know, spontaneous dancing. But I suspect if you're back to the football thing, you know, if you're a football fan, I bet some of you may dance in your living room all by yourself. You know, you just got to jump up out of your chair because Jordy Nelson just got a touchdown. You know, I mean, so that we do have some spontaneous celebrations. And just a kind of observation about the celebration of good things. Sometimes I think there's one of two extremes that we tend to go to. One is that we think there's never a time to dance. We think life is serious business. And there's hard things, and there's tragedies in the world. How could you dance in the midst of this? How could you ever, you know, kind of cut loose when there's so much trouble? And there's work to do too, you know. And there's things to get done. And how can you dance? When I was growing up, my parents took us to church, and we were involved in this church. And I had friends, and we liked to horse around in the church building, because we were there a lot, it seemed, and we'd do things that we weren't supposed to. And there was one guy that would always catch us. And he did not like kids having fun at church. In fact, we nicknamed him the sheriff, because he was always catching us. Always catching us. And you know, that I grew up with this distinct impression that God didn't appreciate much enthusiasm, much excitement, and especially not running in church. And that message wasn't lost to me. That you think, well, God's really not a celebrating God. He's more of a stern one. More of a stern one. But that can be one extreme we go to. That, boy, there's not a time for dancing. Dancing is just frivolous. The other extreme, I think, is that people think we should always be dancing. Life is just a big party. There's never a reason not to dance. We should just be just happy all the time. And I think for that extreme, I think you got to overlook so much in the world that I'm not sure that's a reasonable way to see the world. It's not always time to dance. There's a lot of life happens between mourning and dancing. A lot of life just happens in between those occasions, you know. And life isn't always exciting. It's not always sad. It's just life. There's a time to dance, and there's a time to mourn. But there is, and from this simple passage, there is a time to dance. There is a time to celebrate the good gifts that God gives us. There's a good time, a time to celebrate. There is a time to celebrate. And same book of John, back in chapter 2, the first time that a miracle of Jesus is recorded in the New Testament. And he and his disciples were invited to a wedding in a place called Cana. This story is just kind of fascinating to me. And so they're at this wedding, he and his disciples, and his mother's there. And it says they ran out of wine at this wedding. They ran out of wine. And his mom came and told him, Jesus, they have no more wine. And it wasn't his wedding. He wasn't the wedding coordinator, you know. And he asked her a question, woman, why do you involve me? You know, why are you talking to me about the wine? And I love this. And his mother says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Unspoken is, do what your mother says, and you do whatever he says. And so then he did a miracle. He turned a bunch of water into wine. Now, if the sheriff had been there, he would have said, the wine's gone. I think there's been enough celebrating here. There's work to do. There's things to go on home. You've had enough. Just, you know, that's enough celebrating. Be done. He didn't. He didn't. He made more wine so that the party could go on. The celebration of this good gift of marriage could go on. That's not how maybe I grew up seeing Jesus as one who encouraged celebration and celebrated those good gifts. And this is the same Jesus, just like the same Jesus that was with Martha and Mary, this is the same Jesus who was at the wedding in Cana that we follow and seek to serve today. So, contrary to what you might have been taught, he is not categorically opposed to celebrating. So, what do we do with this? So there's a time to mourn. There's a time to feel sad. There's a time to express that. There's a time to dance, to celebrate God's good gifts. So a few thoughts about that. One is, we need to give ourselves and others the permission to express strong emotions. Give ourselves and others the permission to express grief, sadness, loss, those sorts of things. And first of all, ourselves, that it's okay, and that it's good and healthy to mourn and to express those, to let it out. Sometimes some of us need to be told that if you're feeling something good or feeling something sad, say something. Some of us tend to kind of keep that stuff to ourselves. I don't know if you're one of those people. I know a guy like that. But some of us need to be told, hey, speak up. Share that. Be open. Let somebody know when you're feeling good. Don't just have a little bit of a grin on your face, but tell people. And we mentioned earlier, mourning well, just talking about how if you have experienced loss, if you are in the midst of loss, how do you deal with that? What are some, you know, how do you go forward, you know, seeking others out, asking for help, being open with close friends and being part of a community, letting folks share your burden of grief is a very good thing. Seeking out and sharing with God through prayer your grief, your sadness, your disappointment, whatever it might be. Look into his word. It's okay to cry. It's okay to let it out. Don't withdraw. Don't isolate yourself. Stay connected. Stay engaged. Don't give up. Our temptation might be, if we're feeling sad, well, nobody wants to talk to me. Well, and you know, the temptation is, or actually the experience you have, maybe some of you have experienced this, you've suffered a loss of someone dear to you, and you realize life is still going on. Everybody else is still driving down the road. You just want to run out there and say, stop, don't you know? Wait a minute. Life can't go on as normal, but it does. But so stay engaged. Don't give up. Don't despair. But share it with others and express it. And dancing, when God gives good gifts, celebrate. Celebrate and share that. Invite friends over when something good has happened. Have friends over and enjoy. Enjoy God's good gifts and be glad for them. Next thought is, don't insist that others express what's going on inside them the same way you would. And this, I think, is important. We tend to, as people, we tend to think others should respond like I do, that others should experience life like I do, because that's the right way to do it, because that's the way I do it. And that's not necessarily true. There is just a tremendous range in emotional capacity or expression of that, and just how you feel things and also how you are able to express those things. And my daughters would sometime when some event was coming up and they were still at home, they were excited about it. They say, "Dad, are you really excited?" And I knew they wanted me to do something to show them how excited I was, but I didn't know what to do. I go like, "Yeah?" And it didn't really satisfy because they were feeling pretty excited and they might be dancing. But they said, "Dad, are you excited?" That's about as excited as I get. No. Anyway, so people expect that you're going to respond the way they do. You know, you're going to be, you know, excited like they are. And the fact of the matter is, I can no more express myself the way you do. I tend to be a little reserved in my expressions. Some people aren't as reserved. And they think, what's wrong with him? You know, that he's cold. But I can't any more be like you than you can be like me. Imagine that, some of you that are really expressive. Imagine being like me. Can you imagine that? That's like me trying to be like you. We are all different in that way. Granted, I need to learn to express myself. And I do sometimes. But anyway, we tend to think that others ought to do like us. And for you, though, that are more expressive, it's hard for us to come up to your level, just so you appreciate that. You know, if you're sharing something really exciting, you know, appreciate that. Some of us, we'll never get where you are, but that's okay, all right? We still appreciate it, and we still are coming alongside, but it may just look different. So, and then finally, just to recognize that Jesus is present in our mourning and in our dancing. He is present. He comes alongside. He doesn't tell us to just, you know, we would never say, if one of our kids is hurt, we wouldn't say, "Oh, you're hurt. Why don't you go to your room and cry it off? Come back when you can be happy." You know, that's not what a loving parent would do, and Jesus doesn't do it that with us. He comes alongside. He knows that we have emotions. He gave them to us. We have emotions. He comes alongside, and in that sadness, he is there. He's the God of all comfort, it says in 2 Corinthians, and he's moved by us, by our sadness. So bring our sadness and loss to him. Be honest with him. Pour out your heart. He can handle it. He can handle it. And as believers, if you've put your trust in Christ, you can mourn with hope. It says in 1 Thessalonians 4, it says, don't mourn like those, or don't grieve like those who have no hope. We have hope for the end of the story, that one day that all of that will be wiped away, all the sadness, all the trouble. And also that he is present in our celebration. Every good and perfect thing comes from him, and we can enjoy it and celebrate it. The New Testament is full of admonitions to rejoice to find joy in the Lord. And that is a good thing. We may, you know, are we called to be stern, sober, unsmiling folks? Jason shared last week that our joy, our smile, our laughter is attractive. It's not attractive. Are you attracted to someone that's always stern and never has a smile on their face? No. God has given us many reasons to rejoice in this life, in the midst of the difficulties. So there's a time to mourn, and there's a time to dance. And God is present with us in both of those. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this word of encouragement that in this life there's a time for these things, and you are present in them. Thank you for this life with its difficulties and with its joys. Help us to experience them, not to sidestep what you do in our lives. Help us to see you in the midst of all these things. Thank you that you're with us. Amen.